Welcome to another edition of WFAE Talks, our weekly podcast. Joining me is Ben Bradford, environment and energy reporter, and Lisa Miller, education reporter. Ben, you did do something a little different this week. Tell us about that. After much discussion about alpacas.
Right. Yeah. So last week we talked a little bit on this podcast. We talked a little bit about the alpacas, and then on Sunday I ended up being the guy to go out.
you ended up volunteering,
and I did volunteer. Right. I did.
Working all week on the coal ash, took his Saturday and Sunday to put together an alpaca piece.
Yeah, I got to go visit them, and they are some strange beasts. Yeah, they're like adorably ugly, I would say, my main takeaway from my weekend with the alpacas.
This was a convention in Cabarrus County. Got a lot of reaction among staff. I mean, our old staff meeting, people really seem to like that story.
I think it all falls into like that, the cute animal thing, you know?
Sure.
It's like, oh, it's so YouTube videos of kittens and you know, whatever. Is anything like that? And okay, what's the... You know, I don't know that I'm not comparing alpacas to kittens in terms of like, I don't know, just like absolute cuteness. But just I think in terms of, you know, things that get eyes drawn and people notice them, you can spend your life reporting on
coal ash catastrophes. Kind of a strange looking animal that I feel like people aren't so familiar with some of those South American animals. And it's kind of a novelty there.
That's true. Thank you, Lisa.
Well, Lisa, we're going to talk to you in a little bit about some looming changes in how we pay our teachers. Another topic today is the little update in the coal ash chronicles that Ben's been covering. But let's get things started with politics. The new guy had a good story this week.
That's right. Yeah, Tom Bullock.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
About the Supreme Court race. And 4 of 7 seats are up for grabs on the North Carolina Supreme Court. And there's some changes in election law. No more public financing of campaigns. Of course, the last one was 2 years ago. There was a lot of outside money that coming into the state and on this race. And looks like there's probably going to be more coming in this time.
Yeah, that's pretty much the gist of the story. I think was that the last time around they had it was public financing was allowed and. But it also meant when you accept public financing, there's a certain cap to how much you can spend. So so taxpayers are essentially supporting your campaign, but it also limits the amount that you can take.
Yeah, there was a lot of outside money. I think altogether, Tom was saying it was $4 million went into that race, and by far, most of that went to Judge Newby.
The Supreme Court is as he pointed out in the story, it's a down ballot race because it's way down the ballot. It's technically a nonpartisan race. There's a lot at stake, and with the legislature getting challenged often in court nowadays, it seems there's a lot of cases that are going to be going. There always is a lot of cases going before the Supreme Court, but a lot of politically charged cases, I guess, are going before the Supreme Court.
You have the whole voucher program and teacher tenure, getting rid of that could work itself up there, and then you have the voting laws that are starting to take effect now too.
So it'll be interesting to see what types, if there's an expansion of the type of groups that come in and spend out and contribute to that race.
So of the 4 seats that are up for grabs, 3 are outgoing Democrats or people who've had more liberal decisions, and then 1 Republican or more conservative justice. So at the same time as we have for the first time in a very long time, North Carolina has a Republican Republican governor and a Republican General Assembly. You're also looking at pickup opportunities for conservatives on the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And so that also is interesting, particularly as these cases are coming through.
Absolutely. Well, another election-related story that was, I thought, really interesting and surprising. Michael Tomczyk had a piece about the controversial election law that cuts the number of days of early voting, but not necessarily the number of hours. But it turns out 35 counties are requesting an exemption from the State Board of Elections.
That's about a third of the counties here.
Yes,
in North Carolina.
And to be clear, this is part of the big election. Those what we've kind of called the sweeping election law, which requires photo IDs for voting, not this time around, but in 2016, will require that voters come to the polls with photo IDs. Makes other changes in terms of voter registration, and makes changes to these voting hours, which is considered to be one of the most significant changes.
Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't seem like there's anything nefarious in this request. It's mainly rural counties, and in some cases they want to offer some fewer days or fewer hours of early voting, but the reason is that they've had some precincts, early voting precincts, that hardly anyone is coming to, and it's based on what their experience in 2010, so they want to adjust those accordingly. If my memory's correct from the story, all of these have been approved. These requests have been approved before they go to the state. Locally, they've been approved by the bipartisan County Board of Elections.
And they have to be unanimous, too.
Yes.
So, you know, you have to have both Republicans and Democrats voting for that change.
Keeping on with politics, we had a meeting this week about political coverage, a news meeting, and, you know, I came to the decision we are going to cover the election, and you all endorsed that.
Yeah. Yeah, a heated debate about that one in the newsroom.
That's our news director taking some leadership there.
Yes.
So, Greg, tell us a little bit about because you have sort of an interesting, I think, outlook on how we approach these things versus I think, you know, some of the horse racing and those kind of things. So tell us a little bit about like how you decided to do this.
Yeah. Well, one thing I got to say, I'm really excited about covering this election because we've added some reporters the last few years, and it's fun to look at an election and having more people to report on these stories. But one thing I want to stay away from is covering polling. There's polls all the time, probably every week. Different camps are going to be releasing polls, and some supposedly independent organizations are going to be releasing polls on different races. And I really don't think it's news. And I think it contributes to the horse race type coverage that you often see in the media. So not saying we never report on those, but I think we need to be very careful and not just automatically go, hey, there's a new poll out. Let's read this in our newscasts.
And the same goes, I'm sure, with fundraising amounts too. In some ways, I think it's really good to look at where the money is going
exactly.
And everything. But you know, sometimes that can come off a little bit as, you know, horse races as well. You know, where the headline is so and so has raised this much and so and so has raised this much. But you know, I think I'm sure we'll kind of dig into a lot of those money issues as well in a big picture way.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, please.
I was just saying that the third part of it is endorsements, and Greg has a very specific viewpoint on endorsements.
Oh,
we get all these emails about them.
Yes. I don't think endorsements are news in most cases. I mean, if a union endorses the union candidate, that's not news. If the
former Senator Elizabeth Dole endorsed Hagan for her race, that would be news.
That would be interesting. but if she endorses someone else, or the Republican in the general election, who cares? I mean, and that goes. You get this out all the time, and they have press conferences. It's not news. And I really want us to stay away from that, not just in sending reporters out, but reporting that in headlines.
All right. So we don't cover polls. We don't cover endorsements.
Didn't say that.
And we don't cover – what was the third one that we don't cover? So what do we cover?
Well, one thing I also we will get to that. These announcements that so-and-so is officially filed, you know, Tom Tillis is running for U.S. Senate. He announced – I mean, he's been running ads for a while now, and then it's suddenly news when he officially files. No, that's just giving him free publicity.
And Clay Aiken did it yesterday, too.
He's actually filing today, and there was news that he is going to file today, and then he puts out a press release, and there'll be more coverage about him officially filing. Well, he's already said he's going to run. He's already campaigning. It is not news. We are not publicity arms for these campaigns.
Right, and it's funny because it would be news if all of a sudden they didn't run.
Yeah, it would.
If they didn't file,
or if
then
there's
it would
some,
be news.
Or you know, if there's some surprise name that suddenly filed that we hadn't heard about, and we reported when he announced he was going to run initially, but now it's just not news. And,
right.
And but we are going to cover some things too. You know, we want to have more substantive reporting. One of those was an example of. That we had this week with Tom's reporting on the Supreme Court race. So we're going to be covering that a lot. You're going to be covering aspects of the state and Democratic Republican Party. And it's, you know, someone brought up in the meeting the other day that it's kind of interesting that the Democratic Party has way more registered voters in the state, but does not control the legislature or the governor's office, and they're having a lot of problems internally. So what's up with that, and kind of examining some of that. We're covering a lot of the U.S. Senate race. Ben, you and Tom are going to be covering that.
Sure.
The legislature, of course, whether or not the Republicans will have their supermajority, hold on to that, and covering different issues that are coming out.
And what you've talked about, I mean, we're going to cover who these people are.
Who these people are, yeah.
What the race is, what are they running on, what are their records, if they have records.
And what are they trying to avoid, too?
Doing some true squatting as well.
Yeah, thank you for reminding me on that. We'll get into that in a second. But here's one thing I find this kind of a little bit appalling in a way, because looking at some U.S. Senate candidates yesterday and their websites, immigration is a big issue. And they have all these stances on different issues, but nothing on immigration. And I didn't look at all of the U.S. Senate candidates, but I just think, we're not going to let them shy away from that. They need to, no matter what they're, it's not a judgment on their stances, but they ought to let people know. And we're going to try to, advocate for the listener and let people and tell our listeners where they stand on these issues. Lisa, you just mentioned truth squatting. I think every Thursday we're going to have stories throughout the election, but I think on every Thursday we're going to make a concerted attempt to try to have some election coverage, whether it's true squatting on ads, bringing in a reporter from another media outlet on some interesting story they had, some analysis from our political blogger Michael Bitzer, or just doing a regular story. We're going to have continuous coverage throughout the primary and general election. I'm excited. Are you all excited as I am?
I was talking to Tom yesterday because he and I, like you said, are doing
you're covering a lot of the money.
You're going to be doing a lot of the money and a lot of the Senate race. And we were talking about this is going to be fun. We're looking forward to it. And then we will get very tired of it very quickly.
Yes.
And then we'll still keep covering it because it matters.
Yes, it does. It does. Mm-hmm. Well, Ben, we'll just stay with you for a minute. The Kolash Chronicles continue. That's the name I've dubbed it, as you've been all over it. And there's been incremental updates this week.
This is the coal ash spill, the Dan River coal ash spill. So I've been doing almost a story a day on this, it feels like. It's probably not quite that many, but it does feel like that sometimes. And thank goodness the alpacas were a breath of fresh alpaca. I was going back and forth. There's no reason I should be telling you this. I was going back and forth with one of our coworkers on alpaca puns throughout the week. I think my favorite was alpaca lips now. Yeah. I think that was my favorite. So there you go.
All right.
What's the latest? Coal ash.
The latest on coal ash. Okay. Yeah. Just a couple things, really. I think that as kind of scrutiny of state regulators and their role in both in monitoring these coal ash ponds throughout the state and in monitoring the spill and the cleanup and those kind of things has intensified, you're starting to see stronger statements from them and stronger responses from them. So the two big things in terms of that this week were that that state regulators announced, and we did a story about this, that they're not going to allow any more coal ash into the Dan River, which might sound like, oh, yeah, duh. But what that actually means is that they have to close the coal ash pond at the Dan River. So it's not going to resume its normal operation because these things pour into these things are permitted to leak ashy water and a small amount of ash, a small portion of their ash into the rivers that they're nearby. The state regulators allow them to do this. This happens throughout the country. And they announced this one, no more. So that means one of two things. Either they're going to have to dig it up, dig out the ash, put it into a landfill somewhere else, which would cost a pretty penny, or they're going to cap it and close it and then seal off all kind of exits for it. So now, because all the water's drained out, so we're not clear on what that's going to be yet. But that's it's a big deal. It's not something that environmental groups are going to be thrilled about necessarily. But
well, the bigger question is what's going to happen to these coal ash ponds statewide. Governor McCrory has made some statements this week saying Duke
essentially. Well, yeah. So Governor, that's an interesting. Yeah, Governor McCrory has said, said that he thought they should move them. He thought they should move these coal ash ponds, which we have throughout the state. There's 36 of them at 14 sites throughout the state, and some of them on the Catawba River. That he thought they should get them off the banks of rivers. He kind of backtracked from that, and it's really kind of and when pressed on it, has said, okay, well, you know, every site might be different. It might not always be the safest or the most, you know, economic method to have them do that at every site, but we're going to review that and make sure. So it's been sort of a moderate strengthening of language, I would say. But in terms of concrete actions, we're still kind of waiting to see what those are going to be. And there are two separate sort of ways that the environmental groups are pushing for that. They're pushing for removal, put them into lined landfills that are not on the banks of rivers. And then, you know, I think the Duke has been pushing for putting a tarp over these things and letting the water drain out. And that way you're not going to put any more. And this is just for the retired ones, because we still have active ones where they have to add ash to it. And so there's the question of what's going to happen there. So that's still playing out. And I don't think we have a definitive answer on what's going to happen there yet.
All right. To be determined, I guess. Next topic. Lisa, you covered some things that were going on in Raleigh this week, one of them being how are we going to pay our teachers?
Sure did. So basically, there's a task force that's meeting, and this was set up by law to figure out what is going on with teacher pay. Because right now, we're basically trapped in between two pay systems. We have the one where teachers are paid based on years of experience. However, since we've had all these freezes over the past few years, it's not really boiled down to that much. You have, you know, a fifth-year teacher being paid the same as a first-year teacher. And then, you know, if the governor's proposal goes through, which is a pay raise, a substantial pay raise for many teachers, I think about $4,000 or so. You would have
$4,000.
$4,000. You'd have a teacher, very new teachers.
Right.
But you'd have a teacher in their eighth year teaching being paid the same as a teacher in their first year teaching. So, you know, basically that's kind of gone out the window with the experience based. But the state is moving toward incentives, performance based. A pay scale, so that there would probably be a base salary, and then teachers could, what they're talking about in this task force, and you have educators and you have lawmakers in this, and you know they report back to the General Assembly ultimately, and lawmakers can take their recommendations or leave them, but the idea is to really create buy-in with these people coming up with these recommendations. So the things they're looking at are, for example, you know, if you go to a hard-to-staff school, a struggling school, say, you get an extra signing bonus. You get a extra bonus if your performance is really high. And when
how do you
I
judge
say,
that?
Yeah, I know. So this is the controversial part, that a part of that performance would be a good part of that performance, most likely, will be based on growth in standardized test scores of a teacher's students, which, you know, many teachers are uncomfortable with that. They say this is not a fair representation of my abilities. Guilford County is actually doing something where, you know, they have other incentives built in, but, you know, based on performance, a teacher can get up to a $15,000 bonus. But then, you know, you also have what was brought up several times in that meeting was, you know, by teachers, hey, you know, this kind of breeds this competitive environment, and education is about sharing, you know, sharing. If you're a good teacher, you want to share what you know about being a good teacher with other colleagues. So one of the discussion points is, you know, if your whole school does really well, then everyone in the school gets maybe $1,000 bonus or something like that.
And then the principal, in those cases, they would determine whether or not an individual teacher should continue or not. Does that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that would be part of it. But you know, that, you know, as far as those school bonuses, North Carolina had been doing that, but you know, that got gutted when the budget got tight. So you have teachers who are uncomfortable and saying, hey, is the money really going to be there? Are you going to start this program that you're just going to take away a few years from now when things are tough?
Is there, I know when they were discussing this a lot locally with former Superintendent Peter Gorman a few years ago, they're trying to take into consideration factors like, what if a teacher has kids who aren't as good academically starting off, or if they have more boys than girls. And that stands out to me right now. Third grade class, I feel sorry for my daughter's teacher because there's so many boys in there. Boys are a little more disruptive, I think it's fair to say, especially early at younger ages. That's got to be a tougher job for the teacher.
Sure.
And it affects the overall. Are things like that being discussed?
Yeah. Well, that didn't come up in the meeting, but as part of this calculation of growth and student test scores, all of that is factored in. And, you know, how this happens right now, there's a company who calculates this, but they won't really release their formula for how they come up with this.
It's like an advanced analytics sort
of
approach.
It's
the Moneyball approach.
Well, guys, we did it again. I think that wraps another episode of WFA Talks. How do you feel about it? Best one ever?
I feel excellent about it.
I mean, I have to say it's a nice space in the week to kind of sit back and
reflect
on
what we've done.
Issues. Yeah.
Helps me in kind of planning for next week, too, a little bit.
Sure.
Not keeping things on the radar. So, all right, guys. Have a good week.
You too.